Call the Senate Special Committee on Rail Belt Energy System in order today. It's the 24th of February. It's about 2 minutes after nine. We have Senator Machicki, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Giesel, and myself, Senator Coghill, chair. We have before us the Senate Bill 123 today. Recording Secretary is Carrie Cooper-Reiter and Brett Mello. Here helping us out with the sound and LIO. We adopted the version G last week, last time we met, and now we have an amendment G1 that will be proposed before us. So I'd like to ask Rena to come on up here just to give members a little background on this and those listening in. Throughout the weekend, we talked about how to deal with the issues concerning Rail Belt Utility Organization and how it intersects with the Bradley Lake issue. And we have some language that will get with that. But before we do, we had some technical amendments that were suggested by our drafter that I wanted to go ahead and bring up first. And and so I think we have in our packet an amendment G1 that you can kind of follow along the amendment with. So, Rena, put yourself on the record. And by the way, I have not closed public testimony, and today we do have some folks that want to testify again. And we'll have online the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, Anthony Scott. We have Jeff Warner from MLNP. And then we do have Rick Baldwin from Homer Electric Association who wants to testify. So we'll make time for all of that today. We all have the amendment? Okay. So Senator Giesel will have to go. She has another bill up. So in the meanwhile, we have before us Rena, who will talk to us about a potential amendment. By the way, I did that last time.
You withdrew your.
I was reminded. I'm sorry. We just got a note. Do I want to remove my objection for the version G, which we did just as we ended the last session. So thank you. Rena.
Thank you.
You are online.
For the record, Rena Miller, staff to Senator Giesel and on loan to the special committee for the purposes of SB 123. As Senator Coghill said, you have before you Amendment G1. This amendment was recommended by our legislative legal drafter in relation to the way that municipal utilities and entities are and are not subject to what within this bill. The exemptions that these municipal utilities have in AS 4205711 are very broad, and the drafter felt it would, as we're trying to make sure that utilities that are in fact part of a network served by an ERO then must comply with the ERO statutes. It's important to actually go into these citations on Amendment G1 and be a little bit more clear than we have been. So on the bill, page 4, on line 2, following, so line 2 currently says, an operator that is otherwise exempt from regulation under this chapter shall comply. The amendment would change this so that an operator that is exempt from other regulation under AS 4205711 or another provision of this chapter shall comply. And then on page 8, we make a similar tweak on line 20, and this is in pre-approval, so that a public utility, as amended, including a public utility exempt from another regulation under 4205711 or another provision of this chapter. And then, if I could jump back to page 4, I've spoken on the phone this morning with folks from the Southeast Power Authority who we've already said on page 1 of this bill, if you have a network where all of the entities are all exempt under 4205711, the RCA shall not require an ERO. And so they're hoping we can make a small amendment to the amendment to add a little clarification on page 4. So on page 4, after line 2, following the word network, we would add the words served by an electric reliability organization. So that end provision on page 4 would say that all users, owners, and operators of an interconnected electric energy transmission network served by an electric reliability organization, including a user, owner, or operator that is exempt from other regulation under AS 4205711 or another provision of this chapter, shall comply. Because those SEPA utilities would not be required to have an ERO per page 1 of the bill, this just kind of doubles up there that the tariff is for an ERO.
So does everybody get that? So you're on page 4, line 3, we're going to delete the word otherwise.
Correct.
We're going to go on through that sentence following the word from, put the other word, the other, in. We're going to go on following under. We're going to put under 4205711 or another provision of. That will take care. And then on that same page going up to line 2, after the word network, we will have served by electric reliability organization. And that would be a comma right after ERO?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And then page 8, I'm doing this for my own benefit as well as the members and the committee. On page 8, line 20, the first word on line 20 is utility. So after the word utility, we would put including a public utility that is exempt from an other regulatory, including a public utility that is exempt from other regulation under 4205711 or another provision of this chapter, period.
So, Mr. Chairman, do you need me to move an amendment?
Would you go ahead and make that amendment? That'll be amendment number 1.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 1.
And before I'll object only to make sure that our recording secretary got the amended amendment. Okay. Discussion? Senator Gray Jackson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm used to the municipality of Anchorage Assembly. Do we need seconds on these amendments?
Nope.
Here?
Okay. Nope.
Excellent. Thank you.
Under our Mason's rules, it's assumed that there is the authority to bring it up, and a second is unnecessary. So any objection to this amendment then? All right. Amendment number 1 then passes. So the other thing that we talked about last time before we adjourned was not only bringing this bill up before us as version G, now amended, was some intent language. And the intent language was born out of the discussion we had last time, with regard to how do we deal with the Bradley Lake that is unregulated, but still is a participant in electricity on this rail belt utility line, which makes for interesting dynamics. So we did type up some intent language, which I'm looking for here. Thank you. And what I'd like to do is go through the intent language real briefly, if you wouldn't mind, Rena. And I think we drafted it up. We sent it to a few of the participants in this arena and the committee members. And then we had our legislative legal look at it for making sure that it was appropriately drafted. So, Rena, why don't you go over the intent language real quickly?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. And just to set the stage, it helps, I think, to step back and look at the point of bringing SB 123, right? And that would be to require these interconnected networks to work together on planning, on reliability for an entire system to benefit the ratepayers all over that system. in order to have those common rules of the road and in order to make sure that we are doing this as a network, everyone that's feeding in and moving power in that system really needs to be part of that reliability organization and part of the planning process. And so far, when we've looked at the rail belt, this makes sense. You have utilities that are regulated, that are certified by the RCA. The RCA has that jurisdiction over those utilities to ensure participation and compliance. There's that component, though, that doesn't quite fit the mold when we come to Bradley Lake. And by Bradley Lake, I don't just mean the project, but I also mean the associated transmission lines that are required services by the suite of contracts that are exempt then from RCA oversight and review. So the question that's kind of come up is how then does 123 and these requirements to work together and participate in an ERO interface with this entity that supplies, I believe, 5 to 10% of the rail belt's power, and yet is not subject to the same levels of regulation as the other entities. And so the intent statement is intended, well, sorry, that sounded horrible. Yes.
It's good. It's,
the intent statement is hopefully a tool that can reflect the committee's purpose and intent with this, and at the same time avoid the situation of having to wade into some of the ongoing litigation and dispute between some of the utilities and other players over some of the Bradley issues. Therefore, the intent statement that you have before you expresses the intent of this legislature that under the bill, reliability standards, the tariff standards that an ERO has, planning terms, project pre-approval requirements will ultimately apply across that entire interconnected rail belt energy network. That broad application is necessary to achieve the desired efficiencies and reliability for Alaskans within the rail belt. SB 123 does not in any way affect or change the existing relationship between the RCA and the Bradley Lake project agreements, contracts, and amendments to those that are exempt under AS 4205-431C. It is, however, the intent of the legislature that after the Bradley Lake project debt is satisfied and the AS 4205-431C exemption expires, all those agreements, contracts, and amendments shall be subject to SB 123, the ERO statutes. Now, should those Bradley Lake agreements and contracts and amendments receive some future extension of those exemptions, this legislature urges consideration of the relationship between Bradley Lake and that associated infrastructure and the rail belt network as a whole and the Electric Reliability Organization, and emphasizes the intent to subject all interconnected network users, owners, and operators to the reliability standards, to an ERO's tariff, to planning, and to project pre-approval requirements.
So in drafting this, it was how do we recognize the unusual circumstance that we find ourselves in trying to put this reliability organization together and its planning to recognize kind of these extraordinary circumstances where one is not actually subject to regulation but is participant in this whole rail belt energy grid. And so this was our attempt at doing that while we're still trying to move forward with the structure. As I was saying right before the committee to one of our friends out here is the rail belt utility system is a system, but it also has appendages. And this is our way of recognizing how some of these unusual circumstances are going to end up folding together for the whole energy grid. And so it's a way of recognizing that. So is there any comment on the way we drafted these up at this point?
No comment.
So what I'd like to do is go ahead and get public testimony before we took a motion on the letter of intent so that we can get those who are participants in this. And be my intention to, if we have this fairly well settled, then we can move on. We have several people lined up for questions, and so let me just tell you who those are that made themselves available for questions. One is Commissioner Anthony Scott from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. One is Chris Rose, who's the Director of the Renewable Energy. I have Kirk Warren from the Alaska Energy Authority online. And then I have several people signed up to testify. And let's see. What I'd like to do is, I think, since we have, let me just double check here. I think we have Rick Baldwin. Yes. Since the topic is up for discussion, we have Rick Baldwin here. So, Rick, why don't you come on up and give your testimony? And I think we've been talking about you all day, so this is your turn to talk to us. Put yourself on the record and go ahead and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Charles R. Baldwin. I'm from Kenai, testifying here today on behalf of Homer Electric Association. I've served as general counsel for HEA for the past 38 years, and in that capacity, I've represented the cooperative before first the Alaska Public Utilities Commission and then its successor, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, in multiple regulatory matters. I also represented HEA in the transactions related to the construction of Bradley Lake, the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, and the contracts that HEA was involved in there. This morning, I'd like to briefly address an issue that recently arose in connection with the committee's consideration of SB 123 and also offer comments on the proposed intent statement that I understand is before the committee this morning, and I thank the committee for allowing me to present this testimony. In recent testimony submitted on behalf of another utility, an amendment was proposed that would have addressed the effect that SB 123 would have on what has been termed as the Bradley Lake agreements. As this committee is now no doubt aware, in an effort to fast-track the construction of the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, in 1988, the legislature enacted an amendment to the Alaska Public Utilities Regulatory Act, exempting from commission jurisdiction the Bradley Lake power sales agreement that was between the Rail Belt Utilities and the owner of the project, the Alaska Energy Authority. This was in order to sell bonds that were very favorable bonds within a window of opportunity that they had to meet. The legislature exempted as well the agreements among the Rail Belt Utilities that provided for the transmission of that Bradley Lake power. And that exemption is before, I think, the committee today in a handout. It's found at AS 4205-431C. Excuse me. Currently, the power that is produced at Bradley Lake accounts for approximately one-half of all wholesale power transmitted within the rail belt generally. So the bulk of the power comes from that one resource, the bulk of transmitted wholesale power. It's important to note that the Bradley Lake agreements and the statutory exemption were put in place at a time to address a unique circumstance which the legislature at the time understood to be unique and provided for that uniqueness by sunsetting the Bradley exemption when the bonds were paid. At last Wednesday's committee hearing on the bill, two questions arose. which I would like to address in my testimony. The first question, when does the exemption expire? The second question, to what extent might language in SB 123 be impacted by the RCA's inability to affect the terms of the Bradley agreements dealing with transmission issues? So first, the term of the exemption. Under the statute, the exemption of the Bradley agreements remains in effect, quoting from the statute, until all long-term debt incurred for the project is retired. Of the debt originally issued to pay for the construction of the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, the last bond is scheduled to be retired on July 1 of 2021. If all rail belt utilities accepted that expiration date for the Bradley Lake exemption, then really any conflict between SB 123 and the Bradley exemption statute would be of minimal concern. However, it's HEA's understanding that certain other rail belt utilities wish to see the exemption extended and are prepared to argue that the exemption will not expire on that date, but rather it will expire on a date that coincides with the expiration date of the Bradley agreements, which is 2041, the Bradley Power Sales Agreement in 2041, or the expiration date of certain new bonds that were issued in order to pay for the Battle Creek expansion, which is part of the Bradley project. Now, this is a significant issue because, as I discussed later in my testimony, there can really be no unified open access rail belt transmission system as long as the commission is precluded from approving electric transmission rates and standards for the Bradley Lake Power. And a recent Supreme Court decision held exactly that the RCA is without jurisdiction to approve transmission tariffs for Bradley Lake Power. Which leads to the second question, and that is, to what extent might the goals of SB 123 be impacted by the RCA's future inability to review and approve the terms of the Bradley contracts? To understand the highly unusual nature of the Bradley exemption, it's first important to understand the relationship between public utilities and, on the one hand, and the public as represented by the State Regulatory Commission, on the other. Under a concept known as the Regulatory Compact, the state gives a utility company a monopoly. And monopoly to serve a specific area. And in return, the state is vested with the power to regulate that company as to rates, conditions of service. This power includes the right to review, to approve, and even to modify contracts affecting the public interest. One of the goals of SB 123 appears to be to foster conditions conducive to common rules and rates for transmitting wholesale power within the rail belt. These rules in the industry are known as an open access transmission tariff, or even shortened in the industry, an OAT. I refer to this intent by the committee. Excuse me. It's in the proposed 4205770 in your draft G. It's on pages 5 and 6 is that section that allows the RCA to implement these regulations requiring the ERO to establish these rules for an OAT. The standards for a rule. where the commission specifically adopted, actually, to adopt regulations requiring the reliability organization's tariff to include standards for open, non-discriminatory transmission. Now, I understand that this statutory language is not intended to authorize the reliability organization to actually establish an OAT, but the language clearly requires the organization to lay the groundwork for the eventual unified rail belt transmission rates and services. So a larger point needs to be made here. It suggests that adopting standards for an OAT is pointless if the commission has no jurisdiction to approve an OAT to start with, unless, as we've indicated, that inability is short-lived. If the RCA is ever to be able to approve a non-discriminatory open access rail belt, transmission tariff for the rail belt, it must first be able to approve tariff provisions that overrule contrary language in the Bradley Lake transmission agreements, because on their face, the Bradley agreements are discriminatory and anti-competitive. They're discriminatory in that they give transmission priority to a single generation resource, and that's the Bradley Lake hydroelectric project that has priority over all other resources. They are anti-competitive in that they limit the right to transport power to a certain select group of utilities. They also provide that disputes are to be decided by a majority vote of the interested parties rather than by a regulatory commission looking out for the public interest. I point these deficiencies out only to make the point that an OAT will be impossible if the commission has no authority to do what commissions do, and that is to oversee these contracts of the monopolies they regulate. HEA is not requesting the legislature at this point to remedy those contract deficiencies, only to understand the potential impediments to achieving its goal of non-discriminatory open access transmission. Note also that while at the present time, HEA is the only generator constrained by the Bradley transmission agreements in selling power, the same constraints will exist for any other entity wishing to make firm power sales off the Kenai Peninsula. So the Bradley transmission agreements effectively at this point preclude any future peninsula-based wind, solar, or tidal projects from access to the rail belt market. That being said, HEA urges the adoption of that part of the initial proposed intent statement, which states that the legislature's understanding that the exemption expires when the original bonds have been paid, the original revenue bonds have been paid, so that the legislature is clear that there will be no extension after those bonds are paid off, and the original purpose for which the exemption was granted is satisfied. The legislature is its own best interpreter in determining the meaning of a statute when the question turns on the question of legislative intent. So while only time will tell whether the RCA's jurisdiction to regulate Bradley Lake matters will be challenged after the 2021 sunset date, by clearly articulating its understanding of that date through the letter of intent the the legislature would make such challenges less likely. This would remove a major impediment to a unified transmission system. I'd like to thank you for providing HEA with this opportunity to offer its comments on the intent statement. This concludes my testimony.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking the time. Questions? Yeah. Thank you very much. We are in a constant uphill learning mode in this particular arena, and there are other people to testify as well. So thank you very much. Very thorough testimony. Rena, you had a sure. We have a brief at ease for a second. We'll go back on record. First of all, thank you, Mr. Baldwin, for coming all the way to Juneau, snow and all. And so we do have some other people who are signed up to testify. I have Jeff Warner with Municipal Light and Power. Jeff, are you able to join us at this point?
Yes. Good morning, Chairman Coghill and committee members. My name is Jeff Warner. I work for Municipal Light and Power. My testimony will be very brief this morning. I definitely appreciate the opportunity to comment on Senate Bill 123, and in particular, the intent statement that is currently before this committee. And my testimony is that the intent statement language does satisfactorily address MLMP's original concern, and we appreciate your consideration of this intent statement.
Jeff, thank you very much. Questions? We have online with us, and remember, we have the RCA, we have Renewable Energy, Chris Rose, and then Alaska Energy Authority, Kurt Warren. We do have signed up to testify Tony Izzo with Matanuska Electric Association. Tony, can you hear us and put yourself on the record?
Yes, Chairman Coghill, good morning to you and the committee. My name is Tony Izzo. I'm the CEO of Matanuska Electric Association. I want to commend the committee on the intent statement that's marked by draft revised 223-20. I believe that it satisfies the concerns that were raised, and MEA completely supports it. I think importantly what it does is it strikes a balance between moving the rail belt forward and some existing contractual agreements that are in statute, and as Mr. Baldwin described, currently being disputed. I would characterize SB 123 as I've indicated before, as overdue and historic, and I think of the phrase, let's not let the perfect get in the way of the extremely good. So again, thank you for finding an artful solution to be able to bifurcate these two things and satisfy those concerns. Thank you. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Tony Izzo. And just for members in the committee, we have Trey Atkinson from in Ketchikan with SEPA, who is online also. He's just listening in, though. So I just thought I would clarify the intent of this intention, of this letter of intent, is really, I think, pretty clear. We're trying to stay out of the litigation, but we're trying to say that when this structure gets put forward, when all the issues are satisfied, that it's our intention that that power coming out of this Bradley Lake agreement transmission would be a part of the planning and ERO process. So I think to characterize it anything different than that, I think would probably be reading into our intent. And so it's a tough one because we're trying to put a structure together and recognize that there are struggles, and there actually As it was mentioned earlier today, it's actually before the courts on this particular issue. It's tough for us to find our way through that. So the intent is once that gets settled or the debt is satisfied, whichever that debt may look like, this would be a unit system under a reliability organization with these kind of planning processes. With that, is there a comment at this point from the committee on the intent statement?
We have an at ease, please.
Sure. Let's have a brief at ease. All right. We'll come back onto the record. Just looking over some of the language on the intent statement. Committee action on the intent language. Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the letter of intent.
Is there any objection to adopting this letter of intent to go along with this bill? All right, so that will be added to the version before us. It does have another committee referral. I think at this point, what I'd like to do, ask the committee members to consider moving this on to the next committee referral. Is there a motion that I can get on to do that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 123, Work Draft 31-LS0959-G, as amended by the committee, with the attached fiscal note, the letter of intent, and the individual recommendations.
Any objection to moving this committee bill as amended with the letter of intent? Seeing no objection, then we'll move the bill to the next committee of referral. Please stand by to sign the documents. Thank you all for your work. Thank you, Rena, very much. And thank you for all the testimony involved and for all those who have put their input. I think the next committee at least has a reasonably good body of law to look through. So thank you very much. With that, we're adjourned.